Hello, my name's Dr. Vivian Miller, and I'm with Dr. Alan Barclay today. And we're doing a podcast for the general public on diet and nutrition, a series. Today we'll be discussing carbohydrates. I'm a GP with 30 years' experience. I specialise in diet, nutrition, diabetes, cardiovascular disease, and general medicine. And Dr. Alan Barclay has a PhD in carbohydrates, and I'll let him introduce himself now.
Thank you, Vivian. Yes, Alan Barclay, accredited practicing dietitian and nutritionist and also a chef. I have 30 years experience or more, in fact, in public health, academia and private practice, seeing many, many different people over the years. So, and we have complementary skills and experience. So that's why we're having a chat today about carbohydrates.
Fantastic. There's a lot of misinformation about carbohydrates. Can you tell us what carbohydrates actually are?
Yes, absolutely, Vivian. And everybody seems to not like them at the moment, bar, well, me anyway. So it's a very important topic. Carbohydrate simply means Latin for water and carbon, basically. So carbonated water. In a crude sense, but it's one of the macronutrients, and that means one of the most important nutrients, so the others being fat and protein, and some might argue alcohol as well, depending on whether you drink it or not. So it is one of the most commonly consumed of the nutrients. Depending on your diet, it might be the most significant contributor to energy in your diet. So it's very important for many of us. Even though for at least the last 20 years, a lot of people have been either minimizing it or trying to avoid it. And that's really what we're trying to talk about. So lots of misconceptions. Do you have a favorite one, or do you want me to launch into the ones that I'm familiar with?
Favorite carbohydrate or a favorite misconception?
Favorite myth, or both. Yeah, that's right.
Or both. I have a lot of favorite carbohydrates. I think my favorite misconception is that carbohydrates are not good for you as a general rule. The problem with that is that if you don't eat carbohydrates, you're more likely to eat fat and have a high protein diet. Of course, those are well known to be associated with weight loss, but other problems as well medically, which we can go into at another date. They're not healthy diets, because any diet that excludes a major food group is not a diet that is responsible, and it's not a healthy diet. So I guess from my point of view, I'm going to ask you to tell us a little bit about the types of carbohydrate.
Yeah, no, that's a good place to start. So what are they? So, and I think this is where a lot of the confusion arises. So carbohydrates includes starches and sugars and also dietary fiber. And I think most people don't realize the latter at the very least. And partly this is because of the way we have made our nutrition information panel here in Australia and New Zealand, but it's not dissimilar in parts of Europe as well, where we just list total carbohydrates and then sugars, but we don't list fiber and starch is not a component. It's optional in the United Kingdom, for example, but not commonly used. So people just think carbohydrates and sugars, not knowing that this other major component, starch, exists, and also they may not realize that fiber is a kind as well. So, but when we talk about starchy foods, these are the ones that a lot of people are avoiding. So that's your grains, whether that's wheat or rice, for example, or maize. But these foods that are made out of them, so breakfast cereals and pasta, obviously. Starchy vegetables as well, though. So a lot of people avoid potatoes, I find, but also sweet potatoes and sweet corn and yams and taros and what have you are also starchy veggies. So they're all major starches. And one that would be close to your heart, of course, is legumes, which are a big favorite for people that are vegetarian. And they're a very good source of starch. Yeah. So when people say they're on a low carb diet, they often mean they're avoiding those foods, not realizing that they're starchy foods. And what, of course, everybody for probably the last 25 years has been avoiding sugars, and of course they are also a kind of carbohydrate. And I think, you know, I could screen the number of times here people talk about carbohydrates and sugars, not realizing that sugars are a kind of carbohydrate. And the one that they aren't talking about, which they don't understand, the truly hidden form of carbohydrate is starches. And, you know, so people think about sugars, they think about what's in their lollies and soft drinks and what have you. But of course, sugars are found naturally in fruits, where they're a good source of energy, but also fiber and vitamins and minerals. But they're also in some vegetables. So a lot of the non-starchy vegetables, you know, carrots, for example, and tomatoes, are sources of sugars. But also milk and yogurt. So I think when people think about carbohydrate, they don't think about dairy foods, but certain foods, you know, the unfermented varieties are also good sources of carbohydrate, lactose. So, you know, it's important to think about those. We're not going to go into dietary fiber today because that's another topic. So we're just going to focus on those two kinds. And yep, you've got a question, I can see. So, yep.
Not so much a question. No, I was just going to say that when I talk about fiber and carbohydrates to patients, I try and simplify it, and I talk about complex fiber. For example, the carbohydrates that are found in broccoli, cauliflower, legumes, which is basically cellulose. There's a good type of fiber. It bulks out the stool, it slows digestion down, and I'm going to ask you all about that in a second. And, it's a good stomach filler, especially for people who are vegetarian, who need to have more vegetables. Then get the sugars, which you're going to talk about again in a second, which is to do with glycemic index. And the glycemic index is connected with simple sugars in that they are easily digested and put the glucose up. And things like potato, white bread, and those sorts of carbohydrates are not as good for you. So I guess when it comes down to it, there's different sorts of sugar. The worst sort, of course, is things like syrupy type of sugars. Glucose is the worst sort. So all the sweets that you can think of that have glucose in them, sucrose in large amounts, artificially sweetened things with added natural sweeteners like sugar specifically, and glucose specifically. So then we get on to glycemic index, which is a concept that I'm going to get you to explain, because that's crucial if you want to understand good and not so good carbohydrates.
Yep, so you have sort of alluded to it, Vivian. People don't understand that all carbohydrates, or I should say all available carbohydrates, not fiber, which you talked about, which includes cellulose, all available carbohydrates, so sugars and starches, are converted into glucose in humans if they're consumed in typical amounts. So the starch is broken down into glucose, and sugar like sucrose is broken down into glucose and fructose. But in humans, the small intestine converts that into glucose before it gets into the blood. It's not all converted into fat, as was the prevalent belief up until fairly recently. The research that's disproven that was only published just over 5 years ago. So all carbohydrates end up as glucose in humans when consumed in normal physiological amounts. And the glycemic index is therefore simply a ranking of how quickly those carbohydrate-containing foods are converted into glucose in the blood. It's a physiological measure. People with diabetes are very familiar with measuring their blood glucose levels. Now the continuous glucose monitors makes that even easier, and some people without diabetes are even using those, for better or worse. But they give you an idea of how rapidly and how long your blood glucose levels rise for. And in general, no matter what the source, it goes up within half an hour to the peak. So whatever food you're having, peak blood glucose levels is about half an hour after eating or drinking it. And then it takes longer for it to go down. So most of the carbohydrate we consume is digested, absorbed, and metabolized, and then brought down by insulin within 2 hours of eating or drinking it. There are a few exceptions, but most of them are in that time frame. So therefore, the glycemic index is a measure of blood glucose over a two-hour period. We use pure glucose as a reference because that's what's in blood and it's available as a drink or as a food, so glucoside, there's various powders and drinks that you can buy that you can use in the testing, and we compare all other foods. Generally, we use 50 grams of pure glucose because that's a reasonable amount. It's equivalent to about three slices of bread or three pieces of a typical serve of fruit. And we compare then 50 grams of available carbohydrate in other foods, so whether that's bread or breakfast cereals or fruit or vegetables or whatever carbohydrate-containing food it may be. So it's relatively easy to do. It's actually relatively cost-effective nowadays because the technology is very mature, and it gives us this index where we can see where foods that lower, sorry, foods that raise blood glucose levels more slowly have a low GI, less than half that of glucose, which is given the score of 100. So they're 55 and under, we say. We give it 10% variation for just the standard variability that's in food and in ourselves as humans. If it's above 70, so it's close to pure glucose, we call it high GI. And of course, there are those foods that are in the middle. So it's as simple as that. It's just a percentage. It's a relative ranking, and it's only for carbohydrate-containing food. So I often see, if I'm looking for an image, for example, of low GI foods, I often see pieces of meat or fish, but they don't have a glycemic index because they don't contain carbohydrates. So it's only for available carbohydrates in foods.
Now, when I talk about glycemic index to patients, I say to them, look, if you're going to go on to a healthier diet, a diet that is lowering glycemic index on average, the foods that you're taking in are lowering glycemic index. I give them examples of how you have to swap things because, I come from some Irish background. There's not much fun saying you can only have two medium potatoes a week. Ideally, if you're trying to lose weight, if you have diabetes, if you don't have any of those problems, perhaps three, but they're not great for you. You need to have something to swap for them so that you don't feel so ripped off, okay? So I give them a choice. I say, look, you can have your rice. I mean, Asian people, for example, it's the worst thing you can say to them is Chinese rice, Japanese rice, high in glycemic index. Go for Indian basmati, long grain rice. There's certain parboiled Australian brands of rice overseas, the long grain basmati rice. Those are lowering glycemic index, and they're a good swap. Unfortunately, sushi doesn't taste as good with them, but most other things are fine. When it comes to things like potatoes, sweet potato, funnily enough, although it tastes sweet, is actually much better for you. If you're going to have a lot of it, it's certainly a lot better for you because it's something called glycemic load, which I'm going to get you to talk about in a sec as well. And pumpkin's good for you. It's about swapping things. So when it comes to cakes and pastries, we know instinctively that most of those are not good for us. So what I suggest is that you make cakes and pastries with a lot of chia seeds, a lot of oat. These things lower the glycemic index. Low butter fats, for example, the olive oil spreads, which have a little bit of butter in them but are not proper butter. Believe it or not, the olive oil spreads are actually okay in cooking. And make your own desserts where you can control the sugar that goes into them. You can control the salt. You can control the type of carbohydrate. It's not just flour. You can use almond meal. You can use other things as well, grains and things. Choose wisely. So it brings us to something called glycemic load, because even if you eat enough sweet potato, even if you eat enough of your healthy desserts, it will still put your blood sugar up over a two-hour average and beyond, more than you would like. And especially if you're trying to lose weight or if you have certain health problems, for example, diabetes. So can you explain about glycemic load?
Yes, absolutely, Vivian. And I think we've already sort of alluded to it. So the GI testing is 50 grams of available carbohydrate, which is equivalent to roughly three slices of bread. So But you don't necessarily eat three slices of bread at one time. You might have two if you're having one sandwich, or four if you're having two sandwiches, for example. So glycemic load is a simple mathematical equation where we use the GI, it's a percentage, and multiply it by the amount of available carbohydrate in the serve of that food. So whether that's 30 grams for a couple of slices of bread, or double that for more. So that way you get an idea of the glycemic raising potential of that meal, not just the food that was tested in a 50 gram portion. So it's much more practical for those people who are very closely monitoring their blood glucose level, like people with diabetes, to use the glycemic load, because it gives a very strong indication of not just how much their blood glucose is going to rise, but also with their insulin as well. So it's the best correlate with the blood glucose and insulin requirements of any metric of carbohydrate quality. So it's better than total carbohydrates, and it's better than glycemic index alone, which sort of makes sense when you think about it. So you can calculate it. We're lucky in this country, we have available carbohydrate on our nutrition information panels, and a lot of foods do have GI values on them, or if they don't, you can look on www.glycemicindex.com and find the GI value of your favorite food. So you can calculate it. It also has glycemic load values on that website as well, and it's free. So it's easy to calculate that. So glycemic load is the better direct measure of the impact of a particular serve of food on your blood glucose levels. Now, what's defined as low glycemic load? If it has less than 10 grams of glucose equivalents, which is what it is, in a serve, that's low glycemic load. And if it has 20 or more, it's high glycemic load. But of course, we all eat a combination of meals, but it's part of our diet and our daily diet. And a colleague of ours, Geoffrey Livesey, in the UK many years ago now, back in 2013, worked out that it should be no more than 95 grams a day for a person in the Western world, like ourselves, having no more than 2,000 calories a day, or about 8,700 kilojoules. So that's a good target for an average adult, is to have less than 95 grams of glycemic load for the day. Now, this is different, and we'll probably get onto this from those people who are proponents of low carb diets, and there, of course, are many of those today, because they're back in fashion. But you can achieve the same benefits that they're achieving by restricting carbohydrate intake, because they're just looking at total carbohydrate. They're not taking the glycemic index into account. So it's a much better metric, and it gives people the ability, and as you've absolutely hit the nail on the head, if you tell an Asian person not to eat rice, they're going to walk out that door and never come back again, because they have it for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. So what are they going to do? So you're better off saying, swap it, don't stop it. Have one of these, it's better, or some of this. And if you can, there are actually some low GI jasmine varieties, but they're pretty hard to find. And that's part of the problem. We eat some core foods and we don't have the varieties that they do in some parts of the world. Potatoes is another example. There are low GI or lower GI varieties, and the only one that's commonly
Oh.
available in Australia is the Charisma, or otherwise known as
Yes.
Bud Light, which you can get in any supermarket. They're much better than, those typical potato chip variety russet Burbanks, which have a GI of 100. So, you certainly shouldn't be having them more than once a week. But if you have a low GI variety like the Charisma or the Spud Light, then you're going to be much, much better off. So, it's really horses for courses. Be sensible. You don't have to go on a low carb diet in order to get the glycemic benefits, because in this country, you have other alternatives that will lower the glycemic load without disrupting your social and cultural and maybe religious life, because for many people in many cultures, these are very important parts of their lives, basically.
Carb diets. I've seen incredible jumps in cholesterol levels on the low carbohydrate diets, and to the point where you would normally consider treating that person if they were on a low cholesterol diet, a low animal fat diet, because of course it's animal fat that causes your cholesterol to rise. Your genetics play a large part in how high it will rise, but the animal fat in the diet is strongly correlated. So I think the low carbohydrate diets, in my experience, are not healthy. They do cause constipation. They cause terrible bad breath because the way they work is putting somebody into ketosis, which is because there's not enough glucose in the blood. The glycogen stores in the liver, which are made from the glucose in the blood, excess glucose in the blood, are no longer there. And so the body goes to a different way of powering itself, in a nutshell. And You find that these diets are not good. Yeah, I don't like them. You do lose weight from them. They're not healthy in the long term. And yeah. You need carbohydrates. Constipation is a massive problem on a lot of these diets. But we get so many vitamins and minerals that cannot be replaced with a multivitamin alone. It's not healthy to not eat carbohydrates. I want to make that so clear. But the other thing I'd like to mention is that on the same subject as substituting certain carbohydrates for the low GI instead of the high GI varieties, what you can do is make sure that you tend to choose the low GI carbohydrates to start with, and then you know that your diet is going to be fairly healthy. And that does mean at some degree of self-control, and it does mean, you know, not having your high glycemic index potatoes. It does mean being careful about how often you eat out a week and things like that. But you get very, very used to changes in diets after a few weeks. So humans are quite adaptable. It's very interesting.
Yeah, you raised a number of important points there, Vivian. And likewise, I'm not a fan of low-carb diets. They're not really common if you look at the global situation. The only parallel I can see that I'm aware of is the Inuit or what used to call Eskimo populations that would have eaten very large quantities of meat, blubbery meat, you know, whales and sea lions and the like at certain times of the year. But they're not renowned for their longevity and they get a lot of diabetes.
Neither
are the
sea lions.
Yeah.
And it's very hard to be vegetarian on a low carbohydrate diet. That's the other problem.
It is indeed.
And on a diet that has no carbohydrates.
Yeah, and I think, you know, you've sort of alluded to it again. We know that the clinical trials, and there are many, show at 6 months people are able to adhere to these diets. They can stick with it for that long, but at 12 months, they generally can't. They've gone back to their old eating habits for whatever reason. And we also see from those trials that LDL, the bad cholesterol, goes up. And yes, you can get digestive tract issues because, as we said at the very beginning, fiber is a kind of carbohydrate. And we know from these trials that when you go on a low-carb diet, you seem to inevitably lower your fiber intake. And in a country like ours, and most of the Western world for that matter, we don't eat enough fiber as it is. We don't meet the recommended 25 grams a day for women, 30 grams a day for men. So going on a low carb diet, you're cutting that even further. So you're decreasing your fecal bulk, your gastric transit time. We don't know what the long-term consequences of these are. We know the short term, which is raised cholesterol and constipation and bad breath and what have you, could be an increase in bowel cancer, I would suspect, and maybe other things like diverticulosis and the like.
Yeah, there is, especially in high meat-eating diets and especially in meats that are preserved, for example, smoked, barbecues, you know, sausages, high-fat, high-meat diets. Yeah, there's definitely a correlation.
So whereas we know vegetarian diets, and in particular vegan diets, and I'm not necessarily advocating them, they're a separate topic in themselves, but they are shown to have equally good effects on blood glucose levels without the negative effects in the long run, or in the short term for that matter, because the bowels are good and the cholesterols are good on a vegetarian or a vegan diet. So, you know, I think they're two extremes in many respects, vegan in particular, not vegetarianism, but will achieve much the same from a blood glucose perspective. But one version, vegetarian and vegan, clearly has much better all-round health benefits for longevity. So it's not just about blood glucose. And people tend to focus on that. We can measure it. You know, you can get your own meter. It's easy to do. But that's not the measure of all-round health. And I think focusing on one biomarker alone is naive. Our good health and well-being is much more than that. So I think that's why, and then there's the cultural thing, and we have alluded to it, carbohydrates in many forms, whether it's rice in Southeast Asian diets or pasta in, Middle Eastern and Mediterranean diets, right? I mean, who would live without their pastas in those countries? They love it. They have it every day. They wouldn't be the same without it. So, you're missing that important enjoyment, but also cultural aspect as well by cutting out
comes
these.
Comes up to quantity. Comes
it
up to
does.
Quantity, and that equals glycemic load.
That's right. And one other thing we haven't talked about, you've alluded to it, you can also decrease the glycemic load if you add protein or fat, because that's having an impact on the glycemic response of the diet. But you can also mix. So traditional cuisines often had rice with legumes, for example, and an Indian diet's a very good example of that. So you're balancing it out, whether it's lentils or chickpeas or beans, they're actually helping to lower the glycemic load as well, because they are low GI foods. So if eaten traditionally with quality ingredients, you can get that glycemic load down as well. So, we don't need to throw the baby out with the bathwater. We can have carbohydrates, as long as they're quality carbohydrates, that are low glycemic load, high or a good source of fiber, and avoiding the refined varieties that are so prevalent in our society. And that's, we think about sugar, we talk about soft drinks and lollies, but we don't talk about potato chips and corn chips and twisties and cheesels and all that other sort of thing. And even things like rice, crackers and cakes. I see a lot of people that think they're good choices, but they're not. They're not. They're a glycemic bomb. So, they are very highly refined starch, which will shoot your blood glucose through the roof. So we've got to stop obsessing over sugar. We've got to think about carbohydrates in general, and think about having quality carbs, which are high fiber, low glycemic load. The sugar and starch content is a little bit of a red herring. And on that note,
well, that was very interesting. Thank you very much.
That's right. We've run out of time, Vivian, again. So, yep. So, unless you've got anything else to add, I think we can wind this one up and maybe talk about fiber and health next time.
A lot of it, education and self-control.
Absolutely. Yeah.
That's my final words.
Okay.
Okay.
Thanks,
all the
Vivian.
Best. See you later.
Bye.
Bye.